Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today, I am talking to the founder of XPO, Ben Mears. XPO are a cutting-edge brand for men's fashion that prioritizes style, sustainability, and performance. Through their groundbreaking approach to development, they have been able to produce the lightest, warmest, most durable, and waterproof styles ever seen in the industry. They achieve this without compromising on their commitment to avoiding petrochemical materials and using subpar production methods. And you can head over to xpo-tailored.com to get more information about the brand. And as ever, the links will all go over to menswearstyle.co.uk. But I'm going to bring in Ben here to talk about XPO and enjoy this one.
Yeah, so I'm Ben Mears. I'm the founder of XPO. And how do we get XPO off the ground? Well, XPO is a lifestyle business, lifestyle brand. I guess it's not a sort of fashion brand. It's probably a bit more enduring than that. Without sort of sounding too grand, we sort of create the world's sort of most advanced weatherproof outerwear, and we do so without, as best intention, compromising on performance, planet, or style. So some pretty big claims off the bat.
No, I like it. I can't wait to get into that, because there's so much information and useful information as well on the website and XPO-tailored, and we'll put all the links over on menswearstyle.co.uk. But you've got at least, I want to say, about 20 years of tailoring and training coming into this project. So perhaps we can start from your humble background.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was really lucky. So I, as you say, it is about 20 years now. I cut my teeth. I sort of studied fashion design at Kingston. And during that time, you know, in the summers, I'd work with, I think it was Timothy Everest at the time. And that's where I sort of found my love of menswear, you know, of tailoring and of craft, you know, seeing that the cutters work their magic was something rather incredible.
Yeah.
And then from there, I bounced on. I was fortunate. I went to work for Yves Saint Laurent at the time, before Gucci bought back all the licenses. So I was a sort of tailoring designer for them. Bounced on through to Paris with Emmanuel Ungaro, Jaeger, which at the time was having Jaeger in London was having a great renaissance of sort of British of heritage and British tailoring. And then I went out to Tommy, who wanted to sort of formalize some of their sort of sportswear. Before sort of more recently, I was in Italy for 4 years with a business called North Sales, which is a high performance sales business that had a sort of European and perhaps Italian centric lifestyle business. So yeah, I've had a bit of a sort of an interesting sort of flow to my career, but I guess it's the sort of culmination of years of tailoring, years of sort of, you know, focus on fabrics and details, and then more latterly understanding, you know, about high performance sportswear. It's that sort of blend that sort of stood me in good stead to get XPO going.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't actually thought about it, but a lot of the people that I've perhaps had on the show talking about starting up brands, many of them will come from an entirely different background to fashion, and they wouldn't have that knowledge, the minutiae of fabric, you know, manipulating fabric, how fabric performs, etc. And I think looking at XPO, or just the broad strokes of it, it would have to take someone like you that has that foundation of knowledge to come in and start something like this, because of, you know, if you came from investment banking, for example, you might just go, right, let's just design a swim short. Right, that looks good. And then let's get that out there. But you've got a very in-depth approach. So can we talk about some of the garments that have been launched with XPO and what makes the fabric so special?
Yeah, so I think this, I mean, certainly in this sort of first capsule launch, it's sort of there's two key things that are going on. And the first is the material. So that's we sourced a yarn from a business called Folgar. It's a bio nylon yarn. So that's a yarn that's designed. It's a nylon yarn, but it's made from castor beans. So from the castor beans, you can then take the oil, and from the oil you can create the nylon. So it's still plastic, there's not getting away from that, but it's not made from a virgin petrochemical source. So there's a certain, you know, it's a good option for a bad plastic, if that makes sense. I'm still not overly happy that we're continuing to use plastics, but in this sense, where I wanted something that would perform at a high level, that we could, you know, dare I say it, afford, this is a great option. And, you know, much better than a recycled polyester or a virgin polyester.
Right. And so how hard is it to get hold of these fabrics to make many duplicates and runs? Is this kind of like a prototype capsule for you just to see how it goes?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I'd say it's a prototype capsule. I wish I could sort of make a smaller prototype capsule, but with these things, there's no, you know, the minimum order quantities on yarn and on fabric. And, you know, we have to find the yarn. We have to dye the yarn or dye the fabric, and then have to back it with a membrane. So, you know, things start ramping up on scale quite quickly. And actually the, you know, some of the economic strains, you know, when sort of, I think it was near the first invasion of Ukraine, and the oil prices spiked, and then, you know, there was a knock-on effect for everything. So I think at that point I just said, well, okay, let's just move forward, commit to, you know, bulk fabric and move things forward. So yeah, it is a prototype sort of, you know, range in that sense, but it doesn't feel it feels pretty committed.
Right. And where are the garments made?
So they're made in China, but yeah, that is with a business called Stealth, and that's, you know, that's the other sort of special part to the collection. We're using a stitchless technology where we use a sonic weld to fuse the fabrics edge to edge. And then we use a patented technology to apply a tape on the reverse using a high frequency weld. And basically, it's super refined and it's really high performance, and no one else in the world is doing this. So yeah, it's pretty, pretty damn special.
And so I'm trying to get to the bottom of where this was percolating in your mind. Was it all the way through your career, like from like Jaeger to Tommy? Was there something that was bubbling away in the background that you wanted to start your own brand and it was always going to look like this, or did something happen at a crossroads?
Yeah, do you know, I think I didn't for many years want to sort of do anything on my own, and even out of university I never wanted to do anything. I didn't sort of like the idea of it being so narcissistical and, you know, oh, it's about me and look what I've created. And even now I'm a bit shy about it, so I have to sort of push forward and, you know, into doing, you know, interviews with very kind,
get used to them,
you know. So yeah, just sort of when did it come? I guess it came in latter years when I understood more about performance, when I understood more about sustainability, and when I understood more about the commercial elements. You know, it began to sort of piece things together. There was a short period in here as well, actually, I didn't mention, but I was a CEO of a small business in London for a bit, of a sort of fashion business. So I began to sort of put all the pieces together to go, hold on a minute, well, that works, that doesn't, that could work. What, you know, where's my pain threshold? Which bits am I good at and which am I not? And I think it probably wasn't until, you know, until I was 40 that I'd sort of realized that, you know, I'd probably made enough mistakes now in other people's businesses, and I should, you know, try and do it on, you know, on my own. So I guess the sort of catalyst, I mean, it has to be both the eyes on sustainability, because in my latter role, the recent role in Italy, you're working a lot with sailing, you're working a lot with the environment. And so, you know, plastics and pollutants and things you can't escape from. They're intrinsically linked with the business. Mm-hmm. And once you open the door to look at, well, you know, hold on a minute, where's that dye going? Or what plastic are we using there? Or is that, where's that fiber going? And then suddenly, you know, you can't close that door. You realize it all. And I think I began to, I began to question myself a little bit about, oh, you know, where do I want to be on this? Where's my integrity level at? And that's, you know, not too speak badly of any sort of form of business, but it's a sort of personal thing to sort of go, well, where do I want to be? What would I like my legacy to be? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What good can I do?
That's interesting, because you'll always be answerable and responsible for it, especially if you're almost front and center. But I guess if you're starting out and you've already seen, you know, you can't unsee things that you've seen. So now if you're going to start your own brand, you can't be a hypocrite to your own values.
Yeah.
And interesting.
When I started, I was like, you know what, I'm going to use performance wools. And that's really all I wanted to do. I was like, I will take tailoring. I know it can work. I've done a bit of this, you know, before. I know some of the Italian mills and I know the UK mills. I will develop wools into performance wear. I'll use shorter meterage because it's, you know, you can with wool than you could with nylons and polyester. And I'll keep classic styles and I'll move through great wool and color and you know, and it will be a sustainable performance business. And, you know, this is the thing, every day's a school day. And I began to learn, hold on a minute, well, what wool do I need? And what happens if that tears? And, you know, is wool good? You know, is it good? What happens with the muling? And is that like, aren't we using loads of agriculture that could be used for other things, about farming and so on and so on? So, you know, I began to question things. And at the same time, I was exploring different materials. It's like, okay, well, you know, these nylons and cellulosic fibers and various others, could we use these? And I called up various, you know, I didn't really know. I knew that there was a business, I can't remember their name now, in the UK, and they'd just done a deal with Heinz to replace all of their sachets with a sort of biodegradable polymer. I was like, so I called them up and I'm like, so you've got this polymer, right? And it can be sort of water resistant and yet it biodegrades. Can you extrude it into a yarn? And, you know, and all these engineers who just didn't want to speak to me. So I just kept pressing and pressing, trying to find, you know, what's the avenue here? How do we do it? And, you know, I spoke to the wool mark and we developed some clothes for them, actually. I think they're on the site as preview styles using Optim wool, which is a sort of pre-stretch yarn. Underweaving goes back and it creates a water impermeable top surface. So they're on this. But I was very much trying to, yeah, bring new materials and concepts into, I think, I couldn't start up without sort of being principled to what I wanted to do. Pretty focused on it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like there was a lot of research, but I mean, research in terms of just getting people on the phone and getting through to the right people, which is all part of the process, but then the actual research begins, right? I guess like the product testing and things
like
that. Yeah,
I mean, that's it. And, you know, I was saying to someone yesterday, I send a lot more emails than I receive. You know, right, it's constantly asking, does that work? Does this, you know, pushing and probing and testing and trying to see. And when I sort of partnered up with these guys, Stealth, they've got this technology that they developed, and it was born from a problem in sort of camping, essentially, where you roll up your tent in a humid state or whatever, and you would get delamination on the seams from the tape sort of coming off. I don't know if you know, perhaps some of the audience will have had this. So they sort of look at the tape seams and you see that sort of peeling off. And it's because the tape comes in contact with moisture and air, and then it's sort of the glue delaminates and your tape's gone. And then you got your tent, in this case, is no longer waterproof. So they developed this technology that didn't use any glue, didn't use an external heat source, and, you know, would use this tape, which was, I don't know, it's like a polyester TPU, PU thing, right? This sort of tri-layer tape, and they'd got it dialed in. And I was like, wow, like this is incredible, right? Like, you know, we need to do this in clothes, you know, this is, I'm in.
That's fascinating. I think that's one of the best definitions I've heard of fashion meeting technology. I think most people, when they think of fashion meeting technology, they envisage something out of Total Recall or a Philip K. Dick novel, where perhaps you'd touch the polyfibers of your t-shirt with your fingernail and it would change color all of a sudden.
Or perhaps your jacket has some kind of thermal coppers in the lining that when you hit a switch, these wires become heated and now you've got a jacket for winter. But I think the most interesting part of where fashion meets technology is ironically what could be perceived the most, I don't know, boring elements, where people don't quite understand these little tiny pushes that technology is making fashion better and more functional, especially in a more sustainable way. So yeah, I've got a lot of time for this.
Yeah, no, and yeah, even now just talking about it, you know, I get excited because it's, you're like, oh, how does that work? That is incredible. I mean, it took me been working on that now for nearly 3 years to understand how to, you know, what materials to use, what membranes to use, because once you've got your fabric, you then have to back it with a you know, a membrane, so that, you know, you've got your full waterproofing. And the membrane's integrity was as important as the fabric in under the welding conditions. And so you have to test the hell out of it. I mean, it's, you know, it's really, really tricky to sort of work out. And there are so many, you know, I know every sort of founder and every, you know, all the startup guys go, oh, there's always problems. But there are, you know, I sort of, the phone goes off at night and it doesn't go on until I'm set in the morning, because I know when I turn it on, there have been all sorts of problems with, you know, a fabric shrinking or something, all of these challenges and things that in stitch garments or in other ways perhaps I wouldn't have realized existed, but being the front runner on this, you know, you encounter them all. So yeah, but that said, I've resolved them all. That's it.
Yeah, you got there in the end.
Yeah.
So did you have to patent any of these fabrics, like the bio nylon, for example?
Yeah, so the you know, bio fabrics are, I would say they're new, but they're not, you know, cutting edge anymore. They've been around for a few years, and new materials are coming through. What I've been trying to do is use them in conjunction with this patented technology in welding, and adjoin the two. And I guess I'm sort of at the most advanced stage of that. I did look, you know, with some lawyers to say, well, hold on, do we want to patent this, you know, as a combined sort of, you know, trilateral patents or whatever it was called. But when they came back with, you know, the bill for that, I thought, well, I'll just wait and see how the reaction is. And if the reaction's strong, then yeah, we'll do that. But there are so many new materials coming through. And thank you for sort of booking this in tonight, actually, because you got me out of going to a cocktail event tonight, which would have been dragging myself over to the other side of London. Because it's week is the Textile Exchange Conference. So it's a sort of the big conference where everyone comes together to talk about solutions, you know, innovations in textiles and manufacturing, and, you know, how to move things forward. And all, you know, all I'm trying to do is use the best materials possible with the best manufacturing and try and break the shackles a bit of what's gone on in the past. But without, you know, like you say, it used to be that innovation was, you know, pressing a button on a jacket and it was all heating up with wires. And do you know what? It's really funny you say that, because I remember in one job, and it wasn't too long ago, but I won't say too much, but, you know, they said, oh, we want to do this tech project. And the supplier had brought in this jacket that was wired, and, you know, you put it with an iPhone charger or something. And I was like, that is not my idea of innovation. You know, this is, that's not modern. This is modern, you know, this advancement, because it makes garments better. And they look better and they last longer, so that, you know, they're in turn sustainable. So yeah, I've sort of gone off on a tangent slightly there.
No, I welcome the tangents. I mean two things. I've said this on the podcast 1,000 times before. Every person I know has had an idea for a t-shirt brand. Not everybody has gone through with the idea and is sitting with 20 boxes of t-shirts and 500 quid's worth of garments in their shed that they can't shift, but they've all had an idea for a t-shirt brand. Number two, I think at every stage, somebody's had an idea of, well, wouldn't it be great if I could just put the key fob in the sleeve of my jacket and then I could get through the checkout at Sainsbury's quicker without getting my wallet out. That is an idea, but it's not innovation. It's not innovation. It's not pushing anything forward.
You know what? Also a really good point. Like, this is, you know, the garment's got to be fit for purpose, right?
Yeah. So,
and this is, no, but you know what, you sort of joke about it, but it's really true. Like, some of my projects that I've failed on, I failed big, but my intention's been there. And so I sort of have this you know, the XPO is built on you know, style, performance, and sustainability. And I use the word sustainability loosely. I'm not happy with it, but it means the sort of good intention aspects. And if any one of those isn't up to scratch, the whole thing fails. So let's just say it was, you know, a jacket for shopping at sort of, I don't know, I was going to say Asda, but let's say Harrods Food Hall, and you needed, you know, you needed your £1 token or something, and your jacket didn't have it. Well, then people wouldn't buy it for that purpose. And I made some bags once in Sri Lanka for the business North Sales. And I don't think anyone mind me reciting the story, but I used the dead sales that were ending up in Malta and ended up in Portsmouth. And the problem is with sales is they've got Dyneema and nasty chemicals and things that you just can't get rid of. The other problem is that a lot of the sales are huge. You can't actually cut them. So I was like, well, how can we make these into bags? What can we do? So I spoke to the factory in the down season. The factory made the sales in Sri Lanka, and we ended up shipping them back or taking, you know, a sale return business. And then I went over to the factory and, you know, went on the line to try and teach them to make some bags, right? These sort of holdalls and various other things. And we used, back then, Coca-Cola was having a big drive for, you know, recycled materials and recycled polyester. So they had a return bottle facility, which we partnered with. So we had recycled webbing, recycled, you know, it was right there in Sri Lanka. And it was, I can't remember, I was going to try and call it like the 30-mile project. It was like, get everything from there. So all this recycled webbing and recycled stuff, and these sales that they would cut up and make into fabulous bags and things like that, and made them and got them into the stores and so on. And everyone was like, nah. And I was like, but they've just done this, it's this, it's this. And the reality was that the style wasn't good enough. And since the style wasn't good enough, it didn't matter how much effort I put in to make this hugely sustainable, interesting project and initiative, I hadn't solved the issue, which was the sales were going to landfill. All I'd done was make it into product that would go to landfill because it wasn't good enough. So, you know, in a roundabout way, that's my way of saying that perhaps we all need key fobs to, you know, our jackets or whatever it is.
Yeah. So no, indeed. I mean, we all need key fobs in our sleeves. And look, I'm tempted to quote George Orwell to you when he said, "All revolutions are failures, but they are not all the same failure." So I think if you have your heart in the right place and you're pushing through with an idea that you believe is true to your own values, but you ultimately know that it's going to be adding value to the end user, then just go for it. Swing for the fences next time. On that bombshell, Ben, where can people find you?
You can send them to the website, which is www.xpo-tailored.com.
And your Instagram handle, you like to hang out there?
Oh, that's xpo_tailored, I believe.
Great. Thanks, Ben. Next time. See you soon. You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.